CliffCentral.com. Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded, the show where we discover and explore the extraordinary link between human and brand behavior. After all, brands impact people and their psyche, and it's people who build brands. So we endeavor to unpack the minds of people and the psychology of branding. Today we explore the topic, future-proof your brand. Be more innovative and make your brand less boring, and also connect to the modern consumer. So at the end of the day, today's conversation, I think beyond just the advertising exec, let's have a conversation with people who are individuals. I mean, I'm going to challenge our guest today to talk about personal branding. I didn't tell him that, but I think that we have to sort of slide it in there somewhere. So to explore this conversation, we have Adrian Miller, co-founder of Plus 27 Advertising, an independent integrated advertising agency. He's led teams in Singapore, India, and sat on boards such as Lowe and JWT. He's won 4 Agency of the Year titles, been a judge at Cannes, and served as chairman at the Lowry Awards. Adrian, welcome to Unbranded.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's really good to be here. I would say Happy Valentine's Day.
No, please don't.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Cool. Awesome. You know, we are thrilled for everyone who is listening, whether you're listening live or not, Happy Valentine's Day. If you're listening after Valentine's Day, it's fine. Showing you some love as well. So, Adrian, you know, your agency has services brands like Discovery, Tiger Brands, and many others. Why do you care about advertising?
I think care about advertising because of the way it sort of influences and impacts people's lives, I think, on a daily basis. I think, you know, it motivates people to do things they maybe wouldn't normally do, or, you know, makes them think about things they wouldn't normally think about. So
absolutely.
I think advertising, or, you know, persuasive communication definitely plays a role in our society, from politics to buying a tennis racket, you know, so.
Got it. Awesome. And when did you fall head over heels for this field?
I kind of fell into the field. I didn't fall head over heels.
You tripped.
I tripped accidentally into it. Yeah, I went to Singapore at an early age, and then a friend of the family said, come into the agency and try write a few headlines.
So you were.
I think I was about 20 years old.
Really? You want to make a little cash?
So I was like, oh, okay, I'll come. It's better than being a waiter or a barman, so I'll come try and write some headlines.
Were you natural at it? Like, you got in and you found your...
Yeah, my father was in advertising, so I sort of grew up in the industry, kind of, so...
You know, there's a new field called epigenetics that talks about how, you know, you could be
exactly
transferred in your genes.
I'm just glad he wasn't fat. And
So, with all this international experience, why is SA so good at advertising compared to many larger markets? I know, coming from America, that a lot of our advertising is far more boring than SA. I mean, SA is quite innovative. I mean, I know things may be changing, but what is SA as a smaller country? What is the competitive advantage? What is the uniqueness?
I think in a smaller market, you sort of got more room to sort of play. You're not sort of appealing to such a huge demographic. You know, you don't have 350 million people that you have to sort of persuade. I think also culturally, I think it's smaller culturally, so you've got more room to sort of play. We have a very sort of definitive culture as well, which is understood.
I see.
You know, you don't have sort of. It's not as disparate as, say, somewhere like Asia or sort of India or, as you say, the States. And I think South Africans have a great sense of humor overall. So I think that's what makes, you know, for more interesting sort of communication. I think, hopefully, I don't think South Africans take themselves that seriously in certain respects. Some they do, but...
It'd be interesting to see what would happen with, you know, the political advertising machine in the States that helped get Trump elected, along with other things. But it would be really interesting to see if things got that intense in South Africa. Can you imagine? I mean, starting to, but...
I'm trying not to.
I mean, can you imagine the EFF with these highly sophisticated campaigns? I mean, it could get really interesting.
No, it could get really interesting, but I don't think... Yeah, one can only hope that sort of level of sort of... duplicitousness does not sort of reach our shores.
you wrote in business, in the, I think, a biz community online, you wrote about, you know, how a lot of advertising just boring. Like, you know, you made a few quotes that I found interesting, how, you know, people don't really read these campaigns. They read what they want. They read what they, you know, that attracts them, right? Mm. You know, globally, there are a lot of boring campaigns. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had to stack up the hours and hours of just boring.
It's immense.
I mean, it's, yeah, years of wasted boringness. Talk us through some of the sort of fundamental basic steps of making things more interesting.
I think, well, the basic step would start with a client-agency relationship that I think is forged on moving together and wanting to create great work. I think that is the starting point. Without that, you're not gonna create great work.
You got a team around.
There's gotta be a level of trust. There has to be a level of, you know, freedom given to the agency. There has to be a level of risk involved. I think, there has to be a direction that both parties want to go to. I think if you don't have that, a goal in mind.
So there's a culture.
It starts the relationship with the client and the agency. Great work. That's where it starts.
So when you, by the time you show up after the brief and you show up at Discovery to pitch, well, not to pitch, but to share what you've created, share the work, you got to be proud. I mean, you guys got to go in.
Absolutely.
Like,
you got to feel like you got to, you know, impress these guys. You know, you've got to show them your best side. And I think, you know, you go through, like any process, you'll go through various scripts or various ideas and you'll reach a consensus and you'll go from there. And I think with any client, and rightfully so, I guess, I mean, they are spending the money, you're going to have to take them on a journey. I mean, you wouldn't probably start the relationship with something really out there in terms of an ad. You'd probably move it in incremental steps, and eventually, you know, the communication will get maybe braver,
sure,
riskier, you know, more humorous, whatever direction you just suit to take. I mean, but at the end of the day, it's a journey, you know.
Got it.
So,
Adrian, no one gets it right all the time. When was the last time you put out some boring work?
Yesterday.
Tell us about it. What happened?
No, I mean, you know, you've, in our industry, you've got what you call the day-to-day,
yep,
that you get out. There's sort of communication that just needs to go out and get done. But then you get those sort of brand opportunities where, you know, it's an opportunity for everyone to just rally around it and sort of try produce the best possible piece of work out there. And I always say, I don't think any agency worth its salt wants to put out any bad pieces of work. I think it's through the process and the bureaucracy of selling the work that I think it gets watered down and it becomes something that it originally wasn't. And that process continues right through the production, right into sort of the last few days of, you know, getting the ad out there. And that's why it's so important to have that special relationship with your client, you know. So,
do you think a lot of boring work happens because people are lazy thinkers or more of a budget issue?
Oh, jeez, lazy thinkers. I think, yeah, there's a culture in agencies where certain briefs perhaps, you know, are given less time than they should. You know, if you go by the adage, you know, every brief is an opportunity, then that shouldn't take place, but it does. I think the amount of, you know, churn work moving through agencies is just not physically possible to make every brief an exciting one or answer in an exciting way. But, yeah, I think you definitely need someone in any agency who's able to spot those opportunities and say, you know, guys, this is the one. You know, so I think that's important. Yeah. And being proactive.
You know, speaking about, you know, boring, or brands that have been able to sort of overcome this sort of boring dynamic, you know, you got brands like Apple, that had people like Steve Jobs who sort of built their brand. One of the interesting things about Apple for me is that Jobs didn't really believe in a lot of research.
Yeah.
You know, he gave people what they wanted.
Absolutely.
Is that what needs to happen sometimes? It's like,
no, he gave people what he wanted.
What he wanted.
And I think that was the right approach. You know, he started with a great product. He didn't start with great advertising.
And
I think, you know, you start with the right, you know, great advertising can't help a bad product. The product has to be good to begin with. And I think Steve Jobs certainly knew his products and design and gave it a sort of the whole brand a feeling and an ethos that people just caught on to. And from there, great advertising took place. And I think it started with Ridley Scott's 1984 the Super Bowl ad. So
Exactly. Was that with Think Differently? Was that...
No, that's why 1984 won't be like 1984.
I see.
When they launched the Mac, I think.
And let's talk about that relationship between a good product and good advertising, how they sort of feed each other.
Yeah.
And how they sort of, you know, how in that sort of ecosystem where a good product pushes the advertising and the advertising pushes the product.
Mm.
Is there a good example you can give me?
Well, I think, I think Apple is definitely comes to mind. I think, brands like Nike, great product, great advertising. Honda, to an extent, great, reliable, great, sort of car. They've been known to do some fantastic advertising in the past. I think there's a bunch of brands out there, Levi's, where you have the product is of high quality. But then you look at the advertising, so is the advertising.
Got it.
So there's no mismatch.
Got it.
The problem comes in when you have a product that's sort of, not what it should be, and then the advertising is trying to aim too high or trying to pitch it too high,
Do you have any examples of where there's a great product, but the advertising is not doing it justice?
That's an interesting question. I actually haven't thought about that. Can I get back to you on that one?
Let me think about that. Think about it. I mean, because the converse is...
There is a converse, though.
I mean, if you think about... do you have one on top of your head?
Not right now, but there is.
I mean, if you think about Nokia, when Nokia was starting to sort of fail, even Motorola.
And that is actually a good example, because Nokia did have a few great ads. I mean, they would have picked up a few lions, and, they weren't exactly... It wasn't exactly bad advertising.
Yeah.
They,
but there's only so much you can do.
When Apple launched the iPhone and I think, changed the way people look at phones and use them, I think Nokia were behind the times. They didn't catch up.
Yeah.
So it was their own undoing, I think.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Adrian Miller. He's the co-founder of Plus 27 Advertising. Where does this Plus 27 come from?
It's the South African dialing code, So we thought, local agency... an interesting way of saying we're local, We're a South African-based agency.
Sure. Also, with the Plus 27, it suggests that you're part of an international sort of community. You're local, but you're international.
Correct, yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Awesome. So, this new age consumer seems to be very clued up and very demanding.
Yeah.
Almost
getting far more savvy, yeah.
Right? They're almost controlling and co-designing what gets put out.
Correct.
How do you make love to such a demanding consumer?
Yeah, and that's the crux of it all right now. And I think that's where marketers have to play catch up. I think a lot of marketers are still trying to play in the traditional space or with the traditional mindset. And when they start looking at the consumer, sort of co-creators, co-instigators, I think we're going to get to a better place in our advertising. I think more authenticity is needed, I think that's what the consumer wants. Doesn't want to be spoken to like a corporate or someone trying to sell them shit. At the end of the day, it's how can you add value to my life first? Whether you're making me laugh, making me cry, giving me something, and then try sell me something.
Got it. After the break, we're going to talk, stay tuned, because we're going to talk some of Adrian's top three tips to make your brand more interesting and less boring, but also how to future-proof your brand. We'll be right back.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and we're discussing future-proofing your brand and making your brand a lot less boring. We've got co-founder, Plus 27 Advertising, Adrian Miller in studio. He says he fell in love with branding, sort of fell into the space in Singapore. What's different about Singapore, Adrian, than South Africa?
Singapore's a hub for Asia. So a lot of the head offices are there for the major corporates like P&G, Unilever, so on and so forth. I think Singapore's also made up of, it's an expatriate society, so you've got people from New Zealand, Australia, the States, South Africa, all working in the industry, which is good because it fuels the talent there. And I find that's one of the issues we have in South Africa is there's no outside talent sort of coming into the country, fueling it, reinvigorating it, bringing new ideas. We're kind of relying on the talent we have and the talent we grow. And sometimes, you know, they can leave you wanting for more. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting.
So that's where Singapore has a sort of, or Asia actually, you know, has an interesting way of looking at how they, you know, work the agencies and everything, you know. It's a bit different.
Before the break, we started talking about sort of co-creating with consumers. You know, one of the things that I find really fascinating is this new influencer movement and how influencers are becoming a part of the creative team oftentimes. So you'll bring in, a celebrity, and they're more than just an ambassador. They'll sit with the agency. They'll sit with the advertising agency to create content that they think will attract their fan base. You know, if they think at 5 million, how do you feel about that? Do you want them in or out of your office?
I don't think our market is big enough right now. I think it's working in the States well because, as you say, you've got 350 million people. I don't think we have those kind of numbers yet to warrant it. The engagement rates, say, on Instagram aren't
that
in the millions. You know, you might have 2 million followers on Instagram, but, you know, you're getting 7,000 likes.
Yeah.
It's kind of not really.
That's fascinating. That 1% like rate.
Well, yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the algorithm and how it works, I think, with Instagram. You know, it's sort of the more followers you have, the less engagement. It's almost counter sort of.
So you take someone like A.B. de Villiers. He's like 4 million people on Instagram. You're trying to tell me you wouldn't want him in your agency to figure out to co-create content together?
No, I wouldn't.
A.B., if you're listening,
focus on your sport.
I mean,
you know, sportsmen, you know, cricketers play cricket and creative people, they're creative. You know? And I think... So, but I think if there's part of the campaign that needs AB, you know, we just did an ad now with Discovery where we used a couple of well-known big sports celebs. I think if there's a reason for them to be in the campaign and there's a creative reason, then fine. But if it's a contrived reason and you hopefully you're going to hitch on the back of their, you know, their so-called fan base on Instagram, I think that's, you know.
It is interesting how... You know, the space and the influence space has changed a bit from when I first came to SA just about 10 years ago. I mean, there was no such thing. I mean, there wasn't really any, the only really influential people were politicians like Mandela. But now, I mean, it does seem that it's moving in that direction.
Yeah, it will.
You know, and then do you have any tips for agencies to be thinking about how to engage influencers, maybe not be part of a creative team, but how should they work together? Is there any sort of... You know, structural way, is it just more come in to a briefing and we'll get back to you? I mean, what is the...
Well, I think if you look at the influencers in the States like Jay-Z or you look at these guys, the role they play in sort of pushing brands is big, you know. They're able to get brands up and running. They're able to sort of...
You know, Jay-Z and Samsung.
Exactly.
That was really cool.
One of the champagnes, I think.
Yes,
he moved people over. But in this country, I don't think we have those sort of people who can move brands yet, who are able to do that.
They can complement.
They can complement it. They can come in and they can sort of, they can be brand ambassadors.
Yes.
Which
is
a very different thing to being a brand influencer.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean? So they can go out and speak on behalf of the brand or, you know, be in the brand's ads. But to push people, their fan base, you know, and ultimately push the brand. I don't know if we're there yet.
That's very interesting.
It's different.
Let's shift the conversation a bit about how you know, what does it take to win a lorry?
I think, you know, what it takes to win any award. I think, you know, you need to create an interesting piece of work that makes the judges sort of sit up and go, can I watch that a second time? I mean, in most judging panels that I've been on, I mean, the minute a piece of work comes up and it doesn't work in the first 10, 15 seconds, it's, you know, next. So I think, you know, if it's not engaging and interesting and, you know, sort of grabs your attention in the first 10, 15 seconds on that judging panel, you're out. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win a medal at the end of the day either, you know.
But as chairman, was there...
It results in a conversation.
As a chairman, was there ever any politics involved? Did Zuma ever give you guys a call? There's a Gupta agency?
No.
You guys must
strangely
give them
not,
an award?
Actually, you know, the Lurie's, when I chaired at the Lurie's, it was actually one of the most polite, sort of non-confrontational, you know, sort of awards that I've actually judged, you know. To be fair, I mean, and I've judged Australian Award, Cannes, DNAD, Clio's, and there's always been heated debates and, you know, sort of arguments, and in Cannes' case, there's a lot of politics involved, you know, we have different countries and stuff, but I think the Lurie's was just very sedate. It was, people walked around the room, chose their piece of work, put up their hands, voted, just... kind of, yeah.
But the Lurie's,
different experience.
They are an important part of helping regulate, or not just regulate, but also just sort of inspire a sort of a benchmark, right? To really sort of promote a sort of competitive dynamic. I mean, they have a role that's valuable in society. Would you agree?
Valuable in society? Not quite sure. Valuable to the industry?
Yes.
I think it's invaluable, actually. I think any marketer needs a benchmark, needs to aim higher. I think we have too many awards worldwide in our industry. We over-congratulate ourselves, I think, as an industry. But I think the country awards are extremely important, I think, you know, and maybe three or four overseas awards, I think. It definitely it helps set benchmarks, and it pushes the young creatives in the agency and the young account servicing people to sort of want to strive for more and better, hopefully.
Got it.
Doesn't always work, I think, but, you know, it's important.
Got it. Let's move to our top three tips to future-proof your brand. And then after that, we're going to go to our top three tips to make your brand less boring. Okay? So future-proofing your brand. First of all, what is future-proofing your brand?
I think in today's world, I think future-proofing your brand is not relying on renting a 30-second relationship from the consumer and relying on that for brand loyalty.
Okay.
I think if you're just going to do that, and then you're going to repurpose that content on other platforms, you're going to fail.
Got it.
I think at the end of the day.
So you can't just take and cut from
TV advert,
throw it on
social media. You know, the same bad ad you put on TV that no one is watching is now on Facebook and YouTube, and no one will watch it again, you know? So it's like, what?
Got it.
You're going to have to, every platform has a reason for being, and you have to create content for that platform, you know?
So would Nando's be a good
used to
example?
Be.
Really?
So, I would think
they've shifted a bit. They're not as
edgy as they used to be, I would say. I mean, I was out the country for many years, but we always used to, you know, hear of the good Nando's ads, and they used to come through, but less so lately, I feel.
So who's an example now? Who is someone that's future-proofing their brand in a sort of a remarkable way?
In South Africa?
Yeah.
In a remarkable way? I don't think anyone's quite hit that mark yet.
So who has internationally?
Brand-wise?
Yeah.
Jeez. Quite a few. I mean, anyway, from Chevy to sort of Levi's to Nike to, you know, the list is long and endless.
Got
you know?
It. Okay, cool.
Because they don't start with a TV ad. They start with an idea. And the biggest thing is they don't put the media before the idea.
Okay. So let's go back. Top three. Is that one of your tips? Put the idea first?
Put the idea first and then generate the media around it. Don't put the media first.
Okay. Okay. Number one. That's number one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think number two, you know, we've got to create work that's, you know, that the consumer is actually interested in, you know, that we must stop interrupting them with stuff they're not interested in, and we must become what they're interested in, you know. No one wants to sit there and watch, you know, Game of Thrones and then a bad ad comes on. You know, sort of the ad we create needs to be as interesting as what it's interrupting.
Wow. I've never heard that put that way. That's brilliant.
So if we can achieve that level of work, I think we're headed towards good things, you know.
You know what's interesting is that I watch a lot, I stream a lot of content. I've got a DirecTV subscription from the States. So
yeah.
I often, I'm online or either I'm on YouTube or something. And if I'm watching a game, you know, I'm a big sports fan. So if I'm watching NBA, for example, and something comes on, it's very rare. I don't click that after 3 seconds or 5 seconds thing on YouTube or whatever. How do you keep me from clicking that and actually watching the whole 30 seconds? If I'm watching an NBA, so let's talk about a specific example. Maybe that's more in the top three less boring. So let's stay on focus. Actually, let's stay focused. Let's stay focused on how do you know, for example, what people are interested in? How do you know what I'm interested in?
I think generally, I mean, you can start looking at demographics and psychographics and things like that. But if you want to just, you know, people at the end of the day are interested in good stories.
Okay.
You know, we all aren't that different that, you know, we'll laugh at certain things touch us. Great storytelling touches everyone, you know, and we need to employ that far more in the work we do, you know, sort of.
Okay.
So it's not a matter of what I know you like, but I think you'll like a great story.
It's a universal.
Yeah, it's a universal.
Got it. All right, so let's recap. Is that your number three?
Yeah, it could be a number three, you know. Do great work. So, I think it's pretty vague, but
So let's recap them. The first is start with a good idea.
I think put the idea before the media.
Put the idea before the actual media.
Yeah.
I love that one. Number two.
It's, you know, don't interrupt what people are interested in. Be what people are interested in.
Be what people are interested in.
And I think three, if you personally, when you produce a piece of work as a marketer, if you won't share and talk about it, and have a conversation about it and play with it, then why would anyone else? You know, so putting confirmation bias aside, you know, you really have to take an objective look at your work and say, would I, if I wasn't the client or the agency, if I looked at this piece of work, would I post this on Facebook? Would I send it to a friend? Would I play with it? You know, would I start a conversation about it? Would I spend time with this piece of work? Because I think that's important. Spending, you know, that's clients, agencies need to aim for these days. Getting the consumer to spend time with the work.
Before I move on to the top three tips to make your brand less boring, how could Cliff Central future-proof itself? I'm by the way, Gareth, this is free.
I think Cliff Central needs to remain interesting, you know? It needs to remain provocative because that's what it's about. It needs to remain edgy. I think that's what the, you know, Cliff's base is all about. You know, that's what they're tuning in for. They don't want to hear what they hear on, you know, 94.7 and 702. I think
keep the edge.
You got to keep the edge. You know, you, interesting stories, interesting people. I think, you know, it's a continuous flow of interestingness in and out of the studios, and I think that'll work.
Well, thank you. That was my goal for having this conversation with you. Thank you so much for that. Okay, let's move to the top three tips to make your brand less boring. And I have to say that, you know, I feel like there are times when I could step up in this area myself.
Yeah.
For my own work, my own company, my own, you know, my output could be a lot less boring. So I'm very interested in what you have to say because,
I think, I keep using that word interesting because I think it's interesting is a knowledge emotion. I think people employ that in the advertising. If something is interesting, there's a sense of mystery about it. And the problem with advertising, there's no mystery behind any of the work. You know, you're trying to say everything. I mean, how often do you meet someone and say, wow, that guy's really interesting. He's really consistent and on message. You never say that.
So I need to add more mystery.
So it's like, you know, brands think they have to be consistent and on message every single time. And at the end of the day, that's just boring. That's not interesting. You don't have friends who are consistent and on message. Cool. So why would why would you want your brand to be like that? Your brand should add a bit of sort of, ooh, what's that about? That made me think. Hang on, did I like that? Did I hate it? Did I have an emotion about it, or am I just ambivalent?
Got it.
Yeah.
So number one, add more mystery.
Be interesting. Add more mystery. You know, don't be so
obvious
and consistent and sort of.
I get it.
Always on message.
I'm going to go and do an audit of my social media.
I think brands need to approach their work like they approach people, you know? You know?
Got it. Are you in a relationship, by the way?
Yes, I am.
Are you?
Yeah.
And would your partner say you are...
consistent in our message?
Yeah.
No, she wouldn't, actually. But that's it, like a relationship, you know, if when the mystery goes,
it's gone.
The relationship's over.
It's a wrap.
And it's the same with brands, it's the same with friends, it's the same with, if you know everything and it's just boring.
But isn't it paradoxical?
Why would I want, you know, no, it isn't. I think if the product's great and you're still telling me something that I'm interested in terms of the product.
So the product is great.
But the communication is sort of is not sort of doesn't read like a laundry list. You know, on a brochure.
I see.
You know, you, and I know what the next ad going to look like for this certain washing powder, and the next ad, and the next ad, and the next ad. I kind of don't want to watch the ads anymore.
I see.
You just said it 50 ads ago.
Got it.
So you added a new ingredient. Wow. You know, it's like, so it's, if you look at the great advertising out there, it's provocative. It makes you think. You step away from it. Hey, let me watch that again. I'll download that again. It's not always the same type of ad every single time, you know? You look at Nike, you look at any of these.
Got it.
You know?
All right, that's number one. Number one, mystery. Number two.
Number two, I would say, to be less boring, I think you're going to have to start taking some risks. Not everyone's going to like what you do. Some are going to hate it. Some are going to love it. But if people are in the middle, then I think you're going to be in trouble. So I think you're going to have to start pushing the boundaries, you know.
Got it.
And I think don't always start with a 30-second script. Start with an idea and then see where that goes. You know, I keep coming back to that because I think it's so important, you know. Start with the idea, then find the right media for that idea, you know. And don't be contrived. It's the worst thing in the world, and I think brands, we all fall into that trap, you know.
But quickly, how do you convince, I guess it's like any relationship, like you and Discovery, for example, or Tiger Brands, how do you convince them to allow you to take more risk with their budgets?
Trust. I think you build it up over time. Like I said in the beginning of this talk, I think through incremental steps, you produce one good ad, it does good things for them. They allow you to push it a little further. Another good ad does more good things for them. Leads come in, they allow you to push it a little further. I don't think you just do something off the bat, like I said earlier. I think you build a sense of trust, partnership, not a supplier relationship, but more a partnership. And then I think the work will definitely, you know, you start getting into that sort of more, that territory where people will take more risks.
Got it. All right, this is your final one, your final tip.
Final tip. Jeez. I think South Africa is definitely poised to do some interesting things, I think. And start taking on sort of work that's beyond just TV and start entering sort of more 360 titanium type work. I think the tip would be, I think, and where we fall short in this country is I don't think we've integrated our agencies properly with digital and the sort of the normal sort of call them traditional creatives. You walk into any agency overseas in Europe or the States and everything, your digital guys are sitting there working with your traditional guys. They're brainstorming together. They're working. They're coming up with ideas. South Africa is still very much siloed. You still have your typical digital agency. Then you have your traditional agency or you have different departments. And unfortunately, stuff gets mixed in the lost in the mix.
Lost
there.
In the mix.
Yeah, it definitely gets lost.
So top three tips:
integration. A lot more integration is needed in agencies.
Got it.
A lot more.
Got it. Great tips. Great, really, really great tips. Adrian, it's been really wonderful having you.
Thanks for having me.
You know, one of the things that I really like what you said is that South Africa is poised. I mean, if people are willing to step up and take some risk. Right?
Yeah.
Build healthy relationships that allow them to take risk.
Correct.
And start integrating.
I think also sort of lessening the culture of fear, I think, will definitely help produce better work.
Wow.
I think.
Lessening the culture.
And I think, you know, agencies are scared. Are we going to lose this client if we do this, if we say this, if we push here? You know, I think it comes down to the better relationships, and I think we'll get better work.
Now, just quickly, your website for Plus 27 Advertising is?
It's .plus27.co. No Z A.
And on Twitter, it's at +27.
Yeah,
that's you spell it out. +27 +27. I love this sort of branding, this sort of +27 branding. Any sort of final bonus tip before we head out of here? Final bonus tip. It could be related to relationships. I know it's Valentine's Day. If people want to make their relationship less boring, anything like that, anything you want to put out there.
Yeah, as a final tip, I think I just hope agencies, I think, just come back to it all the time. It's not really a tip. I think agencies, clients out there, I think let's start producing better work. I think let's start being more brave, and I think let's start, you know, taking more risks, and we'll reap the rewards at the end of it. I assure you. I think that's it.
Awesome. Adrian, just I really appreciate your sort of global perspective. Would you lastly recommend that people sort of try to incorporate into their budget more travel to sort of open their mind up at all?
Yeah, I would definitely think that. I think more exposure, the better. I think that can't hurt. I think that is, it is a problem I find in South Africa, having been here for the last 5 years. There's a lack of exposure. We look kind of inward, and we don't have that drive of talent coming from the outside to sort of invigorate everything. So we're definitely going to have to start looking more outward, maybe even bringing in more outside people just to
spark
it off.
Got it.
Yeah.
Adrian, all the best with your creative work. We really appreciate it. And
thank you very much.
Thank your team for giving you, for allowing you to come through and share with us on Valentine's
on
Day.
On Valentine's Day. Thanks.
You know, this sort of topic, if you're listening and you want to really, you've got to take it serious. And I really believe wholeheartedly that the conviction and the culture of building an environment of excellence that where everyone pushes each other and you're all on the same page is critically important. I'm really grateful to Adrian for popping in, and we're grateful for you for subscribing and continue to follow us on Unbranded. As we continue to make this more sort of a solid podcast, feel free to email me, TimothyMaurice@gmail.com. That's M-A-U-R-I-C-E, TimothyMaurice@gmail or Timothy@TimothyMaurice.com. Thank you so much. We'll be back with another podcast soon.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.